Now first, the fundamental nature of the goddess's promise. And this is really very simple. It's so simple that we might easily overlook it. Fundamentally, the great goddess Shri's promise is a promise to give. And what does she promise to give? Virtually everything. Everything that is necessary to support the spiritual life. Food, clothing, residence, medicine. You don't really need anything more than that. So we can say that Buddhist economics is the economics of giving. Can even go further than that. Can say that the Buddhist life is the life of giving. To the extent that we possess, to that extent we must give. At least must give material things if we can't give anything more than that. If there's no giving, there's no spiritual life. Spiritual life begins with giving. And we can see this very clearly in the case of the Bodhisattva, that is to say, in the case of the ideal man of the Mahayana, the one who is committed to the attainment of Bodhi, or enlightenment, not for his own sake only, but for the sake of all sentient beings. He, such a being, a Bodhisattva, practices 6 paramitas, 6 transcendental virtues, 6 perfections. And the first of these is dana, or giving. And dana is of many different kinds. There are many different things, many different kinds of things that can be given. And they can be given in all sorts of ways, to all sorts of people. I've dealt with this at some length, in fact, on previous occasions. For instance, in the 4th lecture in the series Aspects of the Bodhisattva Ideal, in the lecture entitled Altruism and Individualism in the Spiritual Life, as well as in my Survey of Buddhism, Chapter 4. So I'm not going to repeat all that now. The practice of dana is widespread in all Buddhist countries, in all Buddhist communities, whether Theravada or Mahayana or of any other school. In those countries, in those communities, the Dharma and those practicing and preaching the Dharma are supported on a scale that we in the West can hardly imagine. And nowhere is this more so, was this more so than in Tibet, that is to say, in the old Tibet, the Tibet that existed up to 1950, or to some extent even up to 1959. I remember in this connection a talk I had many years ago with a Tibetan student of mine, student who was learning English with me. This must have been in the early 1950s. And the conversation took place, of course, in Kalimpong. And the name of this student, I remember, was Agen Chotatsang. He was about 30 years of age, and he was a native of eastern Tibet. In fact, he was a Khambar. If you know anything about Tibetan affairs, you'll have heard of the Khambars. They're very fierce and warlike and have a reputation of being aggressive and undisciplined, but very good Buddhists. He was short, he was stocky, and very straightforward, very direct. And he was one of 5 brothers, and they were all traders. And I'm sorry to say that he was killed about 10 years later, fighting the Chinese in eastern Tibet. I hope he had a good rebirth, even though he died fighting. Anyway, he once told me how he and his brothers spent their income. They said whatever money they had, whatever money they'd made at the end of the year, they divided it all into 3 parts. One part, 1/3, was given for the Dharma. For Dharma purposes, that is to say, for repairing monasteries, providing food and clothing for monks, printing copies of sacred texts, sponsoring religious ceremonies, commissioning images and paintings of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, and so on. One part, 1/3, was spent on pleasure. And I'm sorry to say that this consisted mainly of drinking and gambling, especially gambling, but not smoking. The old-fashioned Tibetans regarded smoking as much worse than drinking. One part was devoted to household expenses as well as being reinvested in the business. And according to my student, according to Agin, this was the general practice income. Everybody, or rather every family, gave 1/3 of their income for the Dharma. Now this is really something for Buddhists everywhere to live up to. We generally think that we're giving quite a lot if we give 1/10 of our income. But by Kambar's standards, this would be comparative meanness. Now, the goddess Shri promises to give the monk, who is the preacher of the sutra, such things as food, clothing, bed, seat. In other words, what she gives in kind. She doesn't give cash. And this is the more traditional practice, and it's still widespread in some parts of the Buddhist world, though less so than formerly. People don't give monks money. They give them what they need in kind. And if I may be allowed to reminisce a bit, I may say that I myself lived in this way for a couple of years. Not in a Buddhist country, but in India. I didn't keep any money at all. Not even in the bank. And I didn't handle money, didn't touch it. And I didn't accept money if it was offered to me. And I found that this arrangement simplified life greatly. There were lots of things that one simply did not have to think about because one didn't have any money. However, I later discovered it was only possible to live like this if one was concerned exclusively with one's personal spiritual development and one's personal spiritual practice. One couldn't live like this if one wanted to engage in Buddhist activities, if one wanted to work in an organized way for the Dharma. For that, money was needed, cash was needed, even in India. So if this was the position even in India, it's much more the position here in the West. It's still possible, of course, even here in the West, to invite the monk who is the preacher of the sutra for a meal. It's still possible to present him with a pair of socks or a small country house. But if you want to support the Dharma to any great extent, it means giving money. In fact, it means giving quite a lot of money. Now, people's attitude to money is rather strange. This perhaps is not surprising. Money itself is rather a strange thing. It's rather a protean thing. One could almost say that money is everything except money. Money is life. Money is power. Money is prestige. Money is success. Money is security. Money is pleasure. Money is love. After all, with money, we can buy love, can buy anything, or at least we think we can. The strangest thing about people's attitude to money, perhaps, is their reluctance to part with it. In the West, this is true even of some Buddhists. They seem to think that there is somehow something wrong in giving money for Dharma work. And we may say that this reluctance is probably connected with our basic attitude towards money. We tend to think of money as something dirty and disgusting, something that decent people have as little to do with as possible, at least in public. After all, we speak, do we not, of filthy lucre. And this expression probably reflects our basic attitude towards it. And Western Buddhists, of course, tend to share this attitude, some apparently more than others. At the same time, they think of the Dharma as something very pure. They think of the Dharma even as something that has to be kept pure. And how do you keep the Dharma pure? Well, one way is to keep your dirty, disgusting money as far away from it as possible. But this is certainly not the traditional attitude. The traditional attitude is that money is good, wholesome stuff. That is to say, money that you've acquired by righteous means, in accordance with the principles of right livelihood. So the best thing you can do with your money is to give it for Dharma work. Could say that money is like manure. It smells a bit sometimes, but it's good, clean, wholesome stuff, really. So we need not be squeamish about handling it, and certainly need not be squeamish about giving it away. Let's remember perhaps what Sir Francis Bacon said 4 centuries ago. Money is like muck, the better for being spread. So if you have any of this muck, spread it around. Spread it in the direction of the Dharma. As the Buddha himself said, don't be afraid of giving. Despite what the Salvation Army says, it doesn't really hurt. In case this sounds a little esoteric, I should perhaps explain that older friends may remember the old Salvation Army slogan or appeal, give until it hurts. But surely this is quite wrong. Surely this reflects a typically Christian attitude. It makes us think of the spiritual life in general as something essentially painful. It makes us think of giving in much the same way as we think of going to the dentist. We put it off as long as possible. Why? Because we think it's going to hurt, really hurt. But it won't hurt. I mean, giving won't hurt. I can't vouch for going to the dentist. Huh? In fact, the more you give, the happier you will feel. The lighter you'll feel, the freer you'll feel. So we should change the slogan. Give till it hurts. Maybe all right for Christians, at least all right for the Salvation Army. But Buddhists should say, give till you swoon with joy. Now, I've spoken at some length about giving, because it seems necessary to do so. But we ought really to pass on now to the nature and significance of the 5 things the great goddess Shri promises to give. But I want to say just a few more words on the present topic. Giving does not mean paying. When we speak of giving, we don't speak of paying. And it's very important to distinguish between the two. In the early days of the movement, that is to say, in the early days of the FWBO, we found that people were very reluctant to give for the sake of the Dharma, even when they themselves were benefiting from it, and saying that they were benefiting from it, assuring you that they were benefiting from it. They were very reluctant to give, but they were often quite ready to pay. Pay, for example, for lectures, yoga classes, retreats, and so on. And we used to wonder why this was so. And eventually I came to certain tentative conclusions, which may not fully explain the matter, but which may shed some light on it. When you pay, you buy. What you buy, you own. you possess. And when you own something, when you possess something, it's yours. And when it's yours, it's for you. So you don't mind paying, even paying for the Dharma. When you give, however, you give away. Money given is money lost. What you give away is no longer yours. What is no longer yours is not for you. So you're reluctant to give, even for the sake of the Dharma. However, I must hasten to add that things have changed radically, changed dramatically for the better since those days. People in general are much more committed to the Dharma, much more committed to the spiritual life, and much more willing, therefore, to give. And therefore, they're much happier, much more positive.